Dune by Frank Herbert, continued. The Baron stood with his back against his private door, his own bolt hole behind the table. He had slammed it on a room full of dead men. His senses took in guards swarming around him.
"Did I breathe it?" he asked himself. "Whatever it was in there, did it get me, too?"
Sounds returned to him, and reason. He heard someone shouting orders, gas masks, keep a door closed, get blowers going.
"The others fell quickly," he thought. "I'm still standing. I'm still breathing. Merciless hell. That was close."
He could analyze it now. His shield had been activated, set low, but still enough to slow molecular interchange across the field barrier. And he had been pushing himself away from the table. That and Piter's shocked gasp, which had brought the guard captain darting forward into his own doom. Chance and the warning in a dying man's gasp, these had saved him. The Baron felt no gratitude to Piter. The fool had got himself killed. And that stupid guard captain. He'd said he'd scoped everyone before bringing them into the Baron's presence. How had it been possible for the Duke? No warning, not even from the poison snooper over the table, until it was too late. How?
Well, no matter now, the Baron thought, his mind firming. The next guard captain will begin by finding answers to these questions.
He grew aware of more activity down the hall, around the corner at the other door to that room of death. The Baron pushed himself away from his own door, studied the lackeys around him. They stood there staring, silent, waiting for the Baron's reaction.
Would the Baron be angry?
And the Baron realized only a few seconds had passed since his flight from that terrible room. Some of the guards had weapons leveled at the door. Some were directing their ferocity toward the empty hall that stretched away toward the noises around the corner to their right. A man came striding around that corner, gas mask dangling by its straps at his neck, his eyes intent on the overhead poison snoopers that lined this corridor. He was yellow-haired, flat of face, with green eyes. Crisp lines radiated from his thick-lipped mouth. He looked like some water creature misplaced among those who walked the land. The Baron stared at the approaching man, recalling the name. Nefud. Iachen Nefud. Guard Corporal. Nefud was addicted to Samuda, the drug-music combination that played itself in the deepest consciousness. A useful item of information, that. The man stopped in front of the Baron, saluted.
"Corridor's clear, my lord. I was outside watching and saw that it must be poison gas. Ventilators in your room were pulling air in from these corridors."
He glanced up at the snooper over the Baron's head.
"None of the stuff escaped. We have the room cleaned out now. What are your orders?"
The Baron recognized the man's voice, the one who'd been shouting orders.
"Efficient, this corporal," he thought. "They're all dead in there?" the Baron asked.
"Yes, my lord."
"Well, we must adjust," the Baron thought. "First," he said, "let me congratulate you, Nefud. You're the new captain of my guard, and I hope you'll take to heart the lesson to be learned from the fate of your predecessor."
The Baron watched the awareness grow in his newly promoted guardsman. Nefud knew he'd never again be without his Samuda. Nefud nodded.
"My lord knows I'll devote myself entirely to his safety."
"Yes. Well, to business. I suspect the Duke had something in his mouth. You will find out what that something was, how it was used, who helped him put it there. You'll take every precaution."
He broke off, his chain of thought shattered by a disturbance in the corridor behind him. Guards at the door to the lift from the lower levels of the frigate trying to hold back a tall Colonel Bashar who had just emerged from the lift. The Baron couldn't place the Colonel Bashar's face, thin, with mouth like a slash in leather, twin ink spots for eyes.
"Get your hands off me, you pack of carrion eaters!"
the man roared, and he dashed the guards aside.
"Ah, one of the Sardaukar," the Baron thought.
The Colonel Bashar came striding toward the Baron, whose eyes went to slits of apprehension. The Sardaukar officers filled him with unease. They all seemed to look like relatives of the Duke, the late Duke, and their manners with the Baron. The Colonel Bashar planted himself half a pace in front of the Baron, hands on hips. The guard hovered behind him in twitching uncertainty. The Baron noted the absence of salute, the disdain in the Sardaukar's manner, and his unease grew. There was only the one legion of them locally, 10 brigades, reinforcing the Harkonnen legions, but the Baron did not fool himself. That one legion was perfectly capable of turning on the Harkonnens and overcoming them.
"Tell your men they are not to prevent me from seeing you, Baron," the Sardaukar growled.
My men brought you the Atreides Duke before I could discuss his fate with you. We will discuss it now.
I must not lose face before my men, the Baron thought.
So?
It was a coldly controlled word, and the Baron felt proud of it.
My Emperor has charged me to make certain his royal cousin dies cleanly without agony, the Colonel Bashar said.
Such were the Imperial orders to me, the Baron lied. Did you think I'd disobey?
I'm to report to my Emperor what I see with my own eyes, the Sardaukar said.
The Duke's already dead, the Baron snapped, and he waved a hand to dismiss the fellow.
The Colonel Bashar remained planted facing the Baron. Not by flicker of eye or muscle did he acknowledge he had been dismissed.
How?
He growled.
Really, the Baron thought, this is too much. By his own hand, if you must know, the Baron said. He took poison.
I will see the body now, the Colonel Bashar said.
The Baron raised his gaze to the ceiling in feigned exasperation while his thoughts raced.
Damnation! This sharp-eyed Sardaukar will see the room before a thing's been changed.
Now,
the Sardaukar growled,
I'll see it with my own eyes.
There was no preventing it, the Baron realized. The Sardaukar would see all. He'd know the Duke had killed Harkonnen men, that the Baron most likely had escaped by a narrow margin. There was the evidence of the dinner remnants on the table, and the dead Duke across from it with destruction around him. No preventing it at all.
I'll not be put off, the Colonel Bashar snarled.
You're not being put off, the Baron said, and he stared into the Sardaukar's obsidian eyes. I hide nothing from my Emperor.
He nodded to Nafud.
The Colonel Bashar is to see everything, at once. Take him in by the door where you stood, Nafud.
This way, sir,
Nafud said. Slowly, insolently, the Sardaukar moved around the Baron, shouldered away through the guardsmen.
Insufferable, the Baron thought.
Now the Emperor will know how I slipped up. He'll recognize it as a sign of weakness.
And it was agonizing to realize that the Emperor and his Sardaukar were alike in their disdain for weakness. The Baron chewed at his lower lip, consoling himself that the Emperor, at least, had not learned of the Atreides raid on Gedi Prime, the destruction of the Harkonnen spice stores there.
Damn that slippery Duke!
The Baron watched the retreating backs, the arrogant Sardaukar, and the stocky, efficient Nafud.
We must adjust, the Baron thought. I'll have to put Raban over this damnable planet once more, without restraint. I must spend my own Harkonnen blood to put Arrakis into a proper condition for accepting Fade Rotha. Damn that piter! He would get himself killed before I was through with him.
The Baron sighed.
And I must send at once to Talaelax for a new Mentat. They undoubtedly have the new one ready for me by now.
One of the guardsmen behind him coughed. The Baron turned toward the man.
I am hungry.
Yes, my lord.
And I wish to be diverted while you're clearing out that room and studying its secrets for me, the Baron rumbled.
The guardsman lowered his eyes.
What diversion does my lord wish?
I'll be in my sleeping chambers, the Baron said. Bring me that young fellow we bought on Gamont, the one with the lovely eyes. Drug him well. I don't feel like wrestling.
Yes, my lord.
The Baron turned away, began moving with his bouncing Suspenser Boyd pace toward his chambers.
Yes, he thought, the one with the lovely eyes, the one who looks so much like the young Paul Atreides.
O seas of Caladan, O people of Duke Leto, citadel of Leto fallen, fallen forever.
From Songs of Muad'Dib by the Princess Irulan. Paul felt that all his past, every experience before this night, had become sand curling in an hourglass. He sat near his mother, hugging his knees with a small fabric and plastic hutment, a still tent that had come, like the Fremen clothing they now wore, from the pack left in the thopter. There was no doubt in Paul's mind who had put the Fremkit there, who had directed the course of the thopter carrying them captive.
Yui.
The traitor doctor had sent them directly into the hands of Duncan Idaho. Paul stared out the transparent end of the still tent at the moon-shadowed rocks that ringed this place where Idaho had hidden them.
Hiding like a child when I'm now the Duke, Paul thought.
He felt the thought gall him, but could not deny the wisdom in what they did. Something had happened to his awareness this night. He saw with sharpened clarity every circumstance and occurrence around him. he felt unable to stop the inflow of data, or the cold precision with which each new item was added to his knowledge, and the computation was centered in his awareness. It was Mentat power and more. Paw thought back to the moment of impotent rage as the strange thopter dived out of the night onto them, stooping like a giant hawk above the desert with the wind screaming through its wings. The thing in Paul's mind had happened then. The thopter had skidded and slewed across a sand ridge toward the running figures, his mother and himself. Paul remembered how the smell of burned sulfur from abrasion of thopter skids against sand had drifted across them. His mother, he knew, had turned, expected to meet a lasgun in the hands of Harkonnen mercenaries, and had recognized Duncan Idaho leaning out the thopter's open door, shouting,
"Hurry! There's worm signs south of you!"
But Paul had known, as he turned, who piloted the thopter. An accumulation of minutiae in the way it was flown, the dash of the landing, clues so small even his mother hadn't detected them, had told Paul precisely who sat at those controls. Across the still tent from Paul, Jessica stirred, said,
"There can be only one explanation. The Harkonnens held Yui's wife. He hated the Harkonnens. I cannot be wrong about that. You read his note. But why has he saved us from the carnage?"
"She is only now seeing it, and that poorly," Paul thought. The thought was a shock. He had known this fact as a by-the-way thing while reading the note that had accompanied the ducal signet in the pack.
"Do not try to forgive me," Yui had written. "I do not want your forgiveness. I already have enough burdens. What I have done was done without malice or hope of another's understanding. It is my own Tahadi al-Burhan, my ultimate test. I give you the Atreides ducal signet as token that I write truly. By the time you read this, Duke Leto will be dead. Take consolation from my assurance that he did not die alone, that one we hate above all others died with him."
It had not been addressed or signed, but there had been no mistaking the familiar scrawl, Yui's. Remembering the letter, Paul re-experienced the distress of that moment, a thing sharp and strange that seemed to happen outside his new mental alertness. He had read that his father was dead, known the truth of the words, but had felt them as no more than another datum to be entered in his mind and used.
"I loved my father," Paul thought, and knew this for truth. "I should mourn him. I should feel something."
But he felt nothing except, "Here's an important fact." It was one with all the other facts. All the while his mind was adding sense impressions, extrapolating, computing. Halleck's words came back to Paul.
"Mould's a thing for cattle, or for making love. You fight when the necessity arises, no matter your mood."
"Perhaps that's it," Paul thought. "I'll mourn my father later, when there's time."
But he felt no let-up in the cold precision of his being. He sensed that his new awareness was only a beginning, that it was growing. The sense of terrible purpose he'd first experienced in his ordeal with the Reverend Mother Gaius Helen Mohiam pervaded him. His right hand, the hand of remembered pain, tingled and throbbed.
"Is this what it is to be their Kwisatz Haderach?" he wondered. "For a while I thought Howitt had failed us again," Jessica said. "I thought perhaps Yui wasn't a Sook doctor."
"He was everything we thought him, and more," Paul said.
And he thought, "Why is she so slow seeing these things?"
He said,
"If Idaho doesn't get through to Kynes, we'll be..."
"He's not our only hope," she said.
"Such was not my suggestion," he said.
She heard the steel in his voice, the sense of command, and stared across the gray darkness of the still tent at him. Paul was a silhouette against moon-frosted rocks, seen through the tent's transparent end.